In an ideal society, we're able to solve our problems without violence.
What are ways we can incentivize nonviolent resolutions?
How would we be able to enforce contracts?
Is eviction an act of aggression, considering the non-aggression principle?
How would a lender get their money back on a bad loan?
Trust, risk, and enforcement in a free society, coming up.
Philosophers. All right, David. I got something I want to talk about this week.
Oh, boy.
Yeah. So, I've been thinking about contracts lately. And I've also been thinking about the NAP a little bit, too. And freedom in general. And what a free society would be like. So,
as one does.
As one often does, I think. With a healthy mind. But, so, I kind of came across a few interesting side effects of those two concepts, and so I think we should talk a little bit about that. What do you think?
Sure.
Okay. So let's start out with like what is a contract.
So I did not bother pulling up a formal definition, but I'll wing it.
Sure.
A contract is a formal agreement between parties that determines what actions will be carried out by either party.
Sure. I think that's
and
a great
optionally like. Exchanges to be made between them.
I agree. And I think it's a great colloquial definition. But what also is often in contracts is contingencies for what happens if someone doesn't go along
yes.
with what they agree to.
Right. You know,
that's a common thing.
Contracts are broken.
Contracts get broken. And so a good contract tells...
This is what happens when it is broken in this way. Yeah.
Exactly. Like who... It outlines who... Like what it means for each party to have violated the contract... or is there a mutual way that the contract can be ended by an outside event? You know, you can build anything you want into these. They're literally just an agreement that you both write down, and sometimes with the help of lawyers, you know, work out, you sign it, and it's just a way of kind of managing expectations and making promises in a very formal way to each other, and then using that to guide a set of actions. And I think most importantly, with contract specifically, because we could do this without a formal contract, but with a formal contract, it also puts that in a language that can be interpreted by an impartial third party, or at least a non-invested or
disinterested.
Yeah, we used that word a minute ago. I forgot what it was. A disinterested party could then adjudicate it more fairly,
yes,
going by the letter of the contract. So typically in like the United States today, or most countries, I would imagine, that allow contracts to be formed, there's a couple things that go along with contracts. One of them is there are certain laws in place or policies or precedents that prevent certain things from being contracted. Like I can't put in a contract that I can kill you if you do something. Like I can't agree to do anything illegal in a contract.
Right.
Additionally, I can't write a contract in a certain way that would intentionally, maliciously, like, work you over too hard, right? Like, I can't, like, there's limits on, like, I can't put a 10,000% interest rate, for example. Like, I'm going to lend you this money, and you're going to pay me back that money with interest. There are, like, limits placed on how much interest you can put. Things like that are designed to, quote, protect people entering into contract agreements. Additionally, the federal government, at the end of the day, is the entity that can be invoked to adjudicate or enforce the terms of a contract, since they have the monopoly on force. It only makes sense that the only entity that can wield guns, you know, and do whatever they want with them, and the society gives them that authority, or at least under the conventional way of thinking, it only makes sense that that entity also...
is the one that settles the disputes.
Exactly. So, there we go. So, the next concept is the NAP, or the non-aggression principle. So, what's the NAP?
The NAP is a philosophical principle that it is morally wrong to initiate force against another person.
Okay. Are there any exceptions to when you can and can't initiate force on another person?
No.
Okay.
The key word is initiate.
Okay.
It is sometimes acceptable to use force against a person, but not to initiate force. So the classic example is self-defense. If somebody else aggresses you, if they initiate force against you, you may return, you may use force against them in return in order to protect yourself.
Okay. Now we have that. Now, we currently don't live in a society where that is the guiding principle for the society necessarily. But we've often talked about in a free society, that would be the guiding principle, or that is a guiding
principle. That is a guiding principle that can lead to a free society. Yeah.
There you go. So let's take contracts into that world. So say, you know, that principle kind of catches on, people begin adopting it, and it goes so far as to lead to the dissolution of any kind of formal government and people enter into a peaceful anarchic state. So now in this world, with the NAP as the guiding principle, you and I would like to, I'd say I own property, I own a home, and I want to rent it to you. Now, a lease agreement is a form of contract.
Yes.
It lays out what we're doing, you know, and how much you're going to pay me a month and who covers what, you know. So we set that out. We just take a standard lease that we had from back in the day because, you know, they still work. It's still the same intentions.
Yep.
And we both sign that. And then one of us breaks it. Now, I can't, let's just say you break it. Like, you decide to not pay me, for sure, example.
That's
just
a very simple way to,
very simple way
to not follow the lease. Yep.
Yep. Okay. You agreed to pay me on the first of every month, X dollars with a 3-day waiting, whatever, all the terminology.
Okay.
You've broken all that.
Okay.
So according to the contract, I now have the right to evict you for not paying.
Right.
And back when there was a government, I could pick up the phone to my local sheriff's office and say, hey, I'm a landlord and I have a tenant who is not paying and I would like them evicted. And they will show up. And this has happened to me. That's how I know, by the way. The state police, not the local police, the state police will come to your door and put a notice that you will be forcibly evicted within the state law's time frame.
Mm-hmm.
But we're in NAP and Capistan now. There is no police, okay? What course of actions do I have under the NAP if you don't want to leave?
That is an excellent question, and it leads into the big philosophical dilemma with the NAP. Well, I don't know if it's a dilemma, but a problem anyway. What counts as aggression? You know, if I... Like, is it, at this point, like, you could frame the situation as, okay, I'm refusing to leave, but I'm also not paying rent, so I'm effectively a squatter. So I'm invading your property.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of.
Sort of.
So, yeah, do you have the right to move me out of your property? Seems like the answer should be yes, but, yeah, exactly how do you do that?
Right, without aggressing on you. That's the problem we're trying to get around here, I guess.
Right. Yep, that is a problem.
And that's what I've been toying with all week, is this concept. I'm sorry for the long intro to the topic, but I think we needed to cover our bases. So
yes.
One of the ideas that I have behind it is like you had alluded to. Okay, do we as a society agree that making use or commandeering another person's property without their permission or using it outside of the bounds of their permission is a form of aggression?
I think yes, sometimes. This gets into another big contention about the NAP. Well, actually, this is mostly about like property rights in a free society, but it still always makes its way back to the NAP. When can property be considered abandoned is normally the contention. Because, like, you know, if I bury a bunch of gold out in the middle of nowhere and I don't go reclaim it for decades and decades, like, is it wrong if you're out exploring with your metal detector or whatever and you find my gold, is it okay for you to take it?
Mm-hmm.
Am I really going to miss it? Does it really matter?
Right. And another one, John Locke talks about this when he talks about his version of classical libertarianism, which it had its different views, but it has a similar way of thinking about things, which is if you come across, like, say, I had moved out and I built a house on a piece of land and I cleared the land to build the house. And then I move away from there, it becomes dilapidated and then it eventually falls into disrepair. And then the nature reclaims the land is the way he would frame it. So a new person coming to that land would see, oh, hey, there's a piece of unclaimed land. And only upon closer inspection, they would find that, oh, there's the ruins of a house that's at this point fully collapsed. It's kind of a mound of dirt.
Someone
at this point
used to live here. Yeah.
Someone used to live here, but it's clearly been abandoned for a long time. I'm going to claim it. And then they put the work in to then make the land livable again.
Now it's theirs.
Because they put the work in to do that. And that was his way of, and you got to keep in mind when he was writing this, the United States, there was no United States at this time. There was the Americas. And there was all this free and open land. And this was his way of preventing people from just saying, I own all this. Of it. It's like, no. It's like,
do you though? Yeah.
You don't own it until you go work it and make it into something that's not natural anymore.
Right, because I can just claim this entire mountain range. It's like, okay, but if you do that, and then, if Bob decides he wants to build a house somewhere in the mountain range, if you show up with a gun and tell him to get off your property, you're a bully.
Right, because he went and worked that land to make it hospitable. And so you couldn't necessarily own land in that way. It was more you can own things that you have done work to. So clearing the land made it to where it was no longer natural.
You can own land, but you can't just claim land.
Exactly. And we kind of saw that get played out a little bit with how... I forget what they're called, but the wagon rushes, and
the land rush,
Land rush. Yeah. Where people, the government had staked it out, but it was just the way it used to be. Whoever got there first and actually started putting a house on it, that's yours.
You
now.
Win. Yep.
You win. It's your house. You
so
know.
Anyway, back to the topic.
So,
So I think in the case of, I've refused to pay my rent and I'm continuing to live in this house. I think you could make a reasonable claim that you have, we're going to ignore, we're going to pretend the reason why we declare you the owner of this house is legitimate. Okay. We're going to ignore that variable. So you own this house and I'm using it, against the contract. You have a reasonable claim that you have other purposes for which you intend to use this house that you own. Namely, to rent it to someone who actually pays their rent. So if you want to do that, then now the situation I think can be reasonably framed as, okay, you're showing up, you want to use this house, you own this house, you want to use it to rent it to someone who actually pays their rent. I am an intruder now. And so in that way, I am getting in your way to do what you want with your house. I'm the aggressor. Because, if you come in and say, get out of my house, and I say, no, then, I haven't actually used force against you, but this is not enough, but there is a subtext of a threat there. If you try to get me out, I'm going to resist.
Right. Well, and also you could make the claim, I guess, that you are no longer you're using my property without permission at that point.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's almost the same as you stealing, as I guess would be an equivalent.
Right.
Okay. So that's one scenario. So, but under that same scenario, what if I break the terms of the lease and I decide, oh, wait, we have agreed for $500 a month. But I then after the fact realize,
not enough money.
I could make $700 if I just evict this guy and put this other guy in.
Yeah.
So then I come to you and say, I'm breaking our lease, even though that's not in the terms, get out of my property.
Mm-hmm. Yes, this is a more complicated question,
because mm-hmm.
it is still your property.
Yes.
I can't say, well, you broke the lease. This is my house now.
Right. And so, how do we enforce? How would you seek enforcement of the contract at that point against me, who owns the property?
I'm thinking, so this now, okay, so we're in full-blown Ancapistan now.
Yep.
There are no like government police or anything like that. Government courts. Okay. So in that case, it depends on what other systems we have in place for arbitration. There would be systems. People will quickly come up with systems to do this because of things like this.
Before we go there, though,
yeah.
What if we hadn't used a third-party arbitrator?
There is no third-party arbitrator?
In this case, before we go to that place, because we can talk about the failings of not having one before we go into why you would have one and use that as a lead-in.
Then it turns into a complicated question. What are the consequences of you evicting me right now? Is this a threat against the life and safety of me and my family? That's where I'm going to be thinking about it, is if you kick me out on the street right now, what happens to me?
Right. And I think if you step back, well, actually, I don't even agree with that necessarily, to be 100% honest with you, because the street if we're talking about that as like the state of nature kind of place, it's not that I'm forcing you necessarily. I'm not going to force anything that would happen to you that would be negative there, you know, because that's the same argument that's used for justifying things like universal healthcare. You know, it's like, sure. Oh, if you don't give me healthcare, then you're responsible for the things that happen to me. Just, you know, so I wouldn't say that's a good way of looking at it. But I think realistically, you know, because we talked about before authority and power, and then we've also talked about property before.
Mm-hmm.
What makes something my property philosophically does not necessarily equivalent to what is or isn't my property practically a lot of the time. It can be, but a lot of the time I own something because everyone else recognizes that I own it at that point. And I think we'll find that this is a similar case. It would depend on what everyone else thought. Was I aggressing on you by violating the terms of the contract and trying to evict you forcibly? Because that's how I would have to evict you at that point, is if I didn't hire an arbitration of any kind.
Yeah, I guess that's true. You are then required to initiate force in order to do what you're trying to do.
Exactly.
But then, yeah, if I'm going to try to, right, if anyone outside is looking to judge this, then I can say, look at this contract he signed. This lease lasts for X period of time. He can't evict me. I'm still paying my rent like I'm supposed to according to the contract.
Right.
I guess the other thing, we could still solve this non-violently. We could solve this with capitalism, where I accept the eviction and get kicked out and I find a new place to live. And I make a point to whoever it is, your next prospective tenant, I tell them, hey, by the way, this guy just kicked me out because he wanted to raise the rent by $200. Do you really want him to be your landlord?
Exactly.
And I can ruin the value of your rental property that way.
Right. And so I think it's at this point we come into looking at third-party arbitration, because there's the kind of direct third-party arbitration, which is the strict contract enforcement, and there's also the social effects of maintaining a contract. So, real quick, before we go there, though, I want to bring up one other scenario, which I think is interesting. What if, instead of a lease, I just agree to lend you money?
Okay, you're lending me money.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So I lend you $1,000 for some reason, and I say, you'll pay me back within a year with 5% interest. It's a reasonable interest rate.
Okay.
At the end of that year, time's up, you've not paid at all, and I would like my money back. Well, you don't have my money anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You've spent it.
Yeah, I've spent it all. I'm broke.
You're broke now. And you're not at that point using any property of mine at that point, because this is different than the apartment.
Yeah, your property has been consumed.
Exactly. I have essentially given you my property in exchange for a promise.
Yep.
And that's different than me allowing you to use a physical piece of property
which you could reclaim.
Which I could reclaim. So in this case, there's nothing that you have that is, quote, mine,
uh-huh,
besides potential value.
Yes.
So in this case, let's take it back to the first one. We're in NAPA Capistan. There are no police. And for the sake of this scenario, we're going to say there is no third-party arbitration that we signed up for. What are my options what happens? Like, how could I potentially get that money back? Or could I?
I don't know if you could.
Yeah. I agree.
This is called a risky investment, and you lost.
Yeah.
This is why credit scores exist.
I agree.
And we would, yeah, society would set up, I say society, I mean people in the society would create something like a credit bureau to determine the trustworthiness of people to give loans to. And you would give me a negative report to dissuade other lenders from lending me any more money in the future, and you take the loss.
Yep.
Like, and yeah, if we have a situation where there are arbitrators, then maybe you can make a claim with our third party arbitrator that at such time, eventually when I'm no longer bankrupt and can pay, then you can collect the debt.
Okay. Well, and before we go to there, I think, you know, if we look into history, these things of things have happened before, back when there may have been an enforcement, but it wasn't a practical option. And we still have a system for this today in the form of pawnbrokers. Most money lent in the past was not lent on faith.
Yeah, collateral.
Collateral was a thing. So
yeah, exactly. Yeah, what did you lend me the $1,000 for?
Right. Or, yeah, what did you give me so that I would lend you the $1,000 that to you, to me is worth it, but to you may not be worth it in your given situation, that I could at least recoup a part of my investment if you didn't give it back. And so I think you would see that become a more common model for those who wanted to make short-term lends in exchange, you know, for real money. They would have to have some type of collateral that would be worth it, you know. And a lot of the times when you look at good collateral, good collateral are things that will make that money back over time. Asset collateral as opposed to liability collateral, which is why if you, you know, like that's why a mortgage is a good investment as far as collateral can go, because
I can just take
the house if you
Houses are valuable.
And even if they're not valuable today because no one's living in it and I'm not making any money on it, I could then make money on it in the future to actually recoup my investment plus some. I won't get the money back as fast as I would have wanted, but I could get it back in a longer term. So all right, so now let's talk about third-party contract enforcement in the NAP land. So we put together, you know, the people in the society decide that, you know what, too many people have had their contracts violated. We would like there to be some type of place or person we could go to arbitrate these contracts, because no one wants to sign a contract with me that would give me the authority to do it because I'm an interested party. Let's go see if we can find a disinterested party. So back to the lease agreement. So we do that. So now zip back a year, we redo the lease, you know, we're doing the lease, and you and I each, you know, we agree on a third party or a disinterested party, which it's this whole job is to read the contract, and they probably would have some built-in features like making sure that we each understand the contract, because they don't want to have to enforce this contract, because anytime they would enforce, they'd had to lose money. You know, the idea would be that their goal is to have clean contracts, because all they would get paid to never have to do anything if every contract was clean. That's their motivation. So they would do a lot of work up front to make sure both parties understand that this is a fair contract, because that's the greatest way to make sure you don't have to do anything. And then we would both pay a portion. And it's at this point that potentially this disinterested party could also operate as an escrow, where if you did have some collateral, it would go to the disinterested party and they would hold it so that I can't just refuse to give it back to you and you would claim it. So that we do all that. Then a few months later, you decide I'm not going to pay my rent anymore. I can't afford it, or it's too high. I'm already living here. And then I come knocking and say, hey, you're going to pay your rent? And you tell me straight up, nope, I have no intentions of paying my rent and you can't make me leave. So at that point, the third party would get involved. How would that play out, do you think? Or do you think that the third party would have right to use force against this person?
Yes, they would. Or an agent of the third party. More on that later. because this has to do with, like how, what is the structure of the society? Who are the arbitrators? Why do they exist? Like, cause there's going to exist for other reasons besides this as well. So yes, at that point, all contract enforcement is just something that's going to be written into contracts.
Right.
We're going to agree up front that if the arbitrator has to get involved because I refuse to pay my rent, then they can remove me by force. Now they're not initiating force. I've agreed that this force can be applied to me. I can't make any legitimate complaints about it.
Okay. And I think one of the other things you get away from that would have been an issue in the past, because that's why I brought up the, well, how would people in this society look at this, you know, because what we're trying to avoid is a I said, you said situation where you go get a bunch of your friends and you've convinced them that I'm trying to aggress upon you, and I go get a bunch of my friends, convince them that you're trying to aggress upon
me. And we have ourselves a nice little gunfight.
And we have ourselves a nice little gunfight over a cheap apartment, you know, which we would have both liked to have avoided, especially me.
Yes.
I owned it, you know.
Yeah, nothing good comes out of that.
Right. And not only that, but then there's the broader public that neither of us are friends with that just see a gunfight, and they don't know whose side to get onto, and we have another episode where we talk about escalation, which yes. would be a good... see that for how that would go. So yeah, but instead, if you see the contract enforcement van pull up, if it's a contract enforcement company that people are comfortable with and they have a good standing in the society, which they would want because that's marketable, then people would be a lot less likely to call foul on you or on me, whoever didn't break the contract or did break the contract, for any kind of overreach.
Yeah.
And so I think that would be a much better way to do it. So but the idea that I was toying with leans along the same lines, but was that, say we as a society agree that not even that is a good enough excuse to use force.
Okay.
So, say for example, we all kind of decide that you in the present cannot agree to have force used against you in the future. You're okay. A different person in that case, even though you're not. But we decide that, you know, he may have said that under those situations, but because we can't go back and recreate all these environmental variables that he was under to make that agreement, we're not going to hold him against that in the future.
Okay.
And the society at large essentially is disaffected by broken contracts. And if you break a contract and then I try to enforce it on you, it's viewed as aggression.
Okay.
So that would leave us in a place where... two things, I think. One, I would have to find a non-aggressive way to get you to move, which I would think most people would agree is optimal. That should have been something considered before force was considered, you know?
Yes, if we can solve something without violence, then that's the better way.
Which is kind of the point of the... one of the big pluses of the NAP is...
Right, because we have the default way to solve our problems, which is kill each other over it.
Exactly, because if you're dead, you can't disagree with me anymore.
Right.
And you can't stop me. So, but that's what we're trying to avoid, because no one wants to live, you know, it's kind of hard to live in a modern society and have a, you know, a normal job and safe and peace when
because I think my neighbor's taking too long to cut his grass, I'm going to go over there and murder him. Yeah,
exactly. And hopefully a better neighbor will move in and I'll tell him the same thing, you know? So that's option one, which I could see being a huge plus, you know, like, well, I can't go force you out because now everyone's going to gang up on me for being aggressive, you know, especially if you're just sitting there saying, hey, I'm just not moving, you know? But then something you'd hinted at earlier, I think would be also a thing that comes into play, which is non-aggressive, which would be the credit score option. So for those who don't know, we already have a system like this. That's where we got the term. Credit scores are already a thing, and they are a way, it's a number assigned by a private, more than one private entity, actually. They each give you a specific credit score to kind of, and they're disinterested because they don't lend money themselves.
Right. They are not the lenders.
Yet. They're not lenders. But they're paid by lenders to find out how risky a person would be to lend money.
Mm-hmm.
And they have a number that they generate by some criteria to kind of gauge that. And there are more than the big three, but there are big three ones in the United States, and there are, I'm sure, many more. But in this scenario, we would have something similar in which this agency would first have to be able to positively identify people, and they would have their ways of doing that. And I'm sure that any contract formed would require you to identify yourself in a way that they could duplicate, so that if you were to go make one contract and then go make a contradictory contract, they could identify that. And then... I think you would see this be more broadly used for more than just your typical hardline financial contracts. You would see this used much more frequently. But it would also give people the option to socially restrict a person's ability, which isn't force, as a consequence. So what this would look like... Oh, go ahead. You were going to say something.
Well, yeah, I'm just predicting where this is going.
That, yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, so I refuse to move out. This results in a penalty on my score, which means, I guess, that it's going to be harder for me to ever find another place to rent again or get a loan to buy a house or whatever. And so this disincentivizes me from ever breaking the contract to begin with. If I decide I don't want to pay, then I move out.
Mm-hmm.
To avoid this penalty.
Exactly. And couple that with me doing everything I can to non-aggressively stop you, which could include things like, fine, I'm not fixing anything that breaks anymore. I'm withholding services. Or when you leave, I'm changing the locks, and you will leave at some point. You have to. Probably. You know, quickly discussing it, you realize that it's not worth it to violate this agreement in the long run. And that's what we're ultimately trying to do, is set up a system that...
Yeah, I can make your life miserable without having to hurt you.
Exactly. And not only that, but I'm making your life miserable not by doing anything to you, but by allowing things
doing
to happen
things
to you.
Around you, yeah.
Yeah. Well, not only that, but like we're taking away options from you that you're not entitled to in the first place. And that's... I think the biggest key thing to think about it as, and when I talk to people before, you know, about this specific way of doing things, they kind of get a little uncomfortable, because if you view the society, TM, which if you don't know what that is, you know, we talked about it like I think a week or two ago or something like that, as the role of society is to provide you with things or to entitle you to things. Say, for example, well, if I go to a store, that store should serve me and should be made to serve me and do business with me, you know, regardless of anything.
Okay.
But that people believe that. Mm-hmm. And there are some good-ish reasons people believe that. For example, you know, if you walk into a store and they refuse to serve you based on your race, your sex, you know, all of these other social characteristics, all of these other, not social characteristics, but, you know, endemic identity characteristics to yourself.
Your demographic,
exactly. We all kind of look at that as that's bad. We don't like that. And so the way we attempted to solve that problem was with a gun. If you don't serve them, someone with a gun will come make you serve them, or we will take it away from you, or we will fine you, or we will do something. And it doesn't matter what you do, it all ends up back at the barrel of the gun, because...
Yeah, this is the way laws are enforced.
Exactly. It doesn't matter. You can keep laying fines, but they can also just keep not paying them. At some point...
If you actually want something to happen, you're going to have to make somebody.
Exactly. In that system.
In this system, yeah.
So, but... And this shouldn't be controversial, but it comes across as controversial sometimes that, no, you aren't necessarily entitled to these things. Just because you exist in a place does not mean the store
other people
in that
need
place.
To act for you. Yeah,
exactly. And so how do we get around that? And that's why we talked about, you know, this credit score system. If you can go report that and say, hey, by the way, or like you mentioned earlier, you could say to the new tenant on his way, like, hey, he was charging me only $500 for this, so you may be getting screwed here, because now he's charging you $200 more a month.
And as soon as he figures out that he can make even more,
you're
out of here.
You're out of here. So if that's a situation you want to find yourself in, go right ahead. But keep in mind, this is what could happen.
But here's your full disclosure that the landlord's not going to give you.
Exactly. There are all kinds of ways that you can still socially enforce these things. And so instead of taking these things that we currently enforce to happen, which is you have to serve this person, you have to sell them goods at the same price as everyone else, whatever. In lieu of enforcing those things to happen, you can then use those things as a way to non-aggressively enforce outcomes that we want to see as a society. So me as a business owner, I hear through the grapevine, or hey, you know, this guy who's a regular customer of mine, you know, he's got a poor credit score now. And not only that, but he did something to John over there. You know what? I don't like that about you. I'm not selling you stuff anymore. Get out. You know, or if you want this stuff, it's going to cost you even more, because I can do that. You know, it enables people who have stake in effect on the society abroad to enforce policy better. Now, and that's what you get to is it's not that these people are doing anything to you. It's not that. It's that they are starting to withhold from you privileges that were being afforded to you because we assumed at the starting point that everyone was in good standing. I think that's the other key component. Everyone needs to start out in life and be assumed to have some good standing for this to kind of work. And that's not necessarily something that I think you could enforce via a contract, but it's more something that you kind of take as a social norm, perhaps.
Well, I mean, you can see this by observation, though. Like, most people, like, especially in a system like this, it's not going to be, like, I have no credit history whatsoever in this system, okay? And I want to go, you know, I want to, I'm tired of living with my folks and I want to get my first apartment or whatever. You know, this is going to be a very normal case.
Mm-hmm.
To be the landlord in an apartment complex and say, you've never rented anywhere before. You're probably trying to rip me off. Like, this is just bad business sense. Most people are not trying to rip you off. Most people who show up at an apartment complex and try to rent actually want to live in your apartment and pay rent. Right. So just as a matter of, it is a usual circumstance that someone is not trying to rip you off like this. You can assume someone with no history as worthy of getting some credit. Obviously, I'm not going to take someone who has no credit history whatsoever and offer to lend them $10 million on some risky business idea.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're not going to get that level of trust from me, but for something that most people want in their lives, like a place to live, a means of transportation, like these are things that you can pretty well rely on people to pay for.
Mm-hmm. Well, not only that, but what we're also talking about is a system that promotes local lending, which mm-hmm. is something we don't see anymore. My dad had an anecdote about this where my uncle, who he's been going to the same bank for 30 years, he is a farmer. And so farmers frequently need to borrow money. That's something they need to do to get them through bad crop cycles, whatever. They're very frequent short-term loan makers where they'll say, hey, I need money today to make you money to pay you back tomorrow. It's a very common thing with farmers to need to do that. Because you're dealing with buying very expensive equipment and so on and so forth. So for 30 years, he was able to go to his local bank, which knew him. The loan officer knew who
first name
he
basis,
was. Yep. First name basis. They know who you are. They know where your land is. They know what you're capable of. And they know that you've paid your debts back. So even though you're asking me for, you know, $150,000 loan, you know.
Yes, but I know you're going to pay it back.
But you've paid it back before. And I know you are not the typical case. But when that bank was then acquired by a national chain bank, the loan officer really doesn't get to make that decision anymore. It's all fed into...
Does the computer think that you're a worthy customer?
Correct. And it wouldn't, because most farmers, if they're there, don't have anything to put down other than assets. Right.
The reason I'm here is that I'm broke, but I have all these assets that I could make work for this. Yeah.
Yeah, but I need to put it in there. And they can't surrender those assets to then make money, so it doesn't make sense. And I can hear people saying, like, well, wait, what? Why would this promote local? And, like, why? You would still have, and you're right, we would still have national lenders. That would still be a thing. But the advantage that local lenders would have over national lenders is the ability to better understand their market. If you're a person who has made a living lending money in your area, and you're successful at it, you clearly have a better understanding of your market than anyone who isn't in that market, that any computer algorithm can necessarily touch at that time. Maybe there would come about a better computer algorithm.
Yeah, in principle, you could devise a computer system that can learn a local market like this. But yeah, you can't take a general model and apply it to a specific case quite so easily.
Right. But even if we were able to, that general model would lend that money. If it was actually better than the local market
if a general model
it would lend
the
money anyway. Yeah. So you still get the outcome you want. And
it's just not promoting local lending anymore at that point.
Correct. And all of this is capable of being done without the need for violence, which I think is key. And so, yeah, you would have people lending money. And not only that, but even in the use case of you don't have any kind of history, there will be some lenders that they can determine based on who your parents are. You know, are your parents good lending people? you know, if I lent money to them, and cosignery would still be a thing.
Cosigning, yeah.
Would still be a thing. Is anyone vouching for you? And there would also be risky lenders who would say, you know what, I'm trying to get into the game, or I'm pretty good at engaging people. You know, I'm pretty good at first time lenders, and you know what, I'm going to offer to you, I'm going to offer you a slightly higher percent interest, which all interest really is, that rate is how risky the investment is perceived by the lender. If the lender's only willing to give you a 10% rate, that's because they think you're very risky. If they give you a 3% rate, they trust you. Like if the credit score is how much you should be trusted, the percentage rate is how much you're actually trusted, in my opinion. You know, that I guess is a good way to view it. So yeah, in that system, you're not necessarily needing any kind of force to engage contracts. It's all being done, and not only that, but it's all being done by essentially not placing the societal benefits as a given or a right. It's acknowledging them as privileges and then allowing people to pull back those privileges, which they have the right to do. You're not forcing people to turn privileges into rights, and you're also not forcing people to use those services that are being provided as quote rights. You know, you're saving force on both ends by doing that. Another thing that's not been talked about or considered is that these third-party lending agencies or these contract enforcement agencies would likely also come as insured. They can offer assurances to the person who is being put at risk for maybe not the total damage, but for a percentage, you know. So if I lent you the apartment and you don't pay it back, I know that I'm going to be able to get you out of that apartment with time. I'm going to have to probably hire someone to just sit by your door and wait for you to leave. And as soon as you leave, slam that lock on it and be like, all right, well, you can't get in now. So here you go.
We're done. Yep.
We're done. But while I wait for that to happen, and you probably will do some awful things to the apartment knowing that you're not going to be able to get back into it before you leave, the third-party broker who worked out all this, who, now that we've talked about the social credit aspect, these entities would also probably be your window to that. They could probably afford to pay for that subscription and use it regularly since they're constantly making contracts. They would acknowledge the risk, they would inform both of us, and they could say, we view this to be a good investment, regardless of whether you do or not, and to prove that, we're willing to offer you an insurance and collect a little bit of extra money from you, the person who's leasing out the apartment. You know, if you pay a little bit extra on your down payment, we'll offer you insurance for, say, he doesn't move out, because we're vouching for him. And so it's not just power to the lender. It's, you can also, if you're a good borrower, you can lean on the agency because they want you to be making more contracts, because they only make money when someone lends you money.
And you don't screw it up.
Yeah. And you don't screw it up, which you have a record of not screwing it up. So they want you to make contracts because they're going to get paid for people lending you money.
The more agreements you make, the more money we make.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And not only that, but they can sell them insurance for if you break the contract, which we got a good faith agreement that you won't.
You are not going to break the contract, so that's just more money that we get from the lender. Yep.
Exactly. So in that case, we're encouraging all the right things. We're encouraging people to honesty. We're encouraging people to pay back their debts. And also, I mean, and you've also heard, I've also heard arguments saying like, well, what if you get behind? What if you're the kind of person that you made some risky investments and no one wants to lend you money? Like, what happens at the very bottom of the barrel where people don't see you as a good investment or want to lend you money? You know, well,
co-signing again, there's one place you could go.
Co-signing is one way, but I guess the two ways I look at it is, one, it would be very hard. First of all, we have to start thinking about, these are the consequences of your actions. At some point,
you must suffer the consequences of your own actions.
You absolutely must. And no one's going to kill you. No one's going to arrest you. You know, like today, if I don't pay back my debts, someone with a gun's going to come take me and throw me in a cage where I still can't pay back my debts. And then not only that, but I'm costing society more money by being in jail. So it's better than that. And the other one is, there's, I think, always a way. Like, there are always people who are willing to do day-by-day loans. Like, people who are willing to take exchanges of labor in exchange for, you know, like, ultimate, like, short-term jobs for that kind of thing. Where it's like, well, I'll pay you by day for what you want to do, like a job. Or if you can't find a place to live, but you really need a place to live to work for me, well, you can work for somebody who owns property, that can provide that as an alternative source of income. And I know this starts to get to that eerie point where people start thinking back to Gilded Age nightmares where, corpo towns, you know. But realistically, I would rather be in a corpo town than exiled out in the wasteland. You know, it's not great, but it's better than starving to death. And nothing's keeping you there. It's not like there's some entity that they can call up to say, hey, someone ran off without paying me. Go get them. Drag them back here kicking and screaming. That doesn't exist here. So those kind of environments are not that bad as long as there's no boot holding you there. You
right.
know? And so I ultimately think that I would lean towards the side of just not having aggression as an I do think that you shouldn't misuse someone's property, I still don't think that we should treat that as an aggression as aggression for the sake of using violence on someone.
Mm-hmm.
And the reason I would advocate against is because anytime violence gets employed, that's another place where the NAP has a hard time. Well, what happens if there's already been violence? How do we rectify that? You know, and you start to see that can start a snowball where, well, I'm coming after this person because they aggressed on me, and someone else is coming after me because they see my aggression on them as an aggression on them. And then my brother gets involved, and then his cousin, and then his friend.
And we have ourselves a nice little gunfight.
And again, you're back to the gunfight, which we're trying to avoid. And if we have systems that can just prevent the gunfight in the first point, why not just use those? Like, why not just say, well, yeah, you know what? He's not going to pay and you can't kick him out. So the non-aggressive way to do that is just, you know, hey,
tell everybody else.
And, social pressure. People highly underestimate social pressure, I think. And
yeah,
maybe not so much now that, you know, we've seen the rise of things like cancel culture come about, but it's, man, it can be hard on a person. You know, if
shame is powerful.
Shame is a very powerful tool. So like you're sitting in your apartment and I'm standing outside just giving you the look. And then I call your parents and they come and give you the look. And then I call your friends and they give you the look. And I get 10 people outside that window all just staring at you. You're going to come out, you know. A good example in the modern day, if you are in a domicile of some kind, you're in an apartment or you're in a home, someone comes up to your doorstep, knocks on the door. You don't recognize them, so you don't open the door. How long can you go without opening that door if they just keep standing there? Especially if you have no police to call to come tell them to leave. And now some people will say, well, this is just harassment. It's like, no, but he's not threatening you. He's just standing there. And I'm not trying to say that harassment is okay necessarily, but is it much better than violence? But the point I'm trying to make is that it's uncomfortable, so much so to the point where we're willing to call the police on people who are just knocking at our door because we feel that social instinct wanting to engage with that person. It's not because you think they're a threat most of the time, or at least not for me. It's because I need to engage with this person for some reason. They want to talk to me.
Well, that sounds like an extrovert problem.
It might be, but I'm just saying it'd be super effective. Maybe extroverts would be the ones who'd be really whipped into shape by this kind of society for once. And introverts would have an easier time of corrupting the system. I don't know, but it's hard to ignore, you know, knowing there's a person right there. Even if you're an introvert, I mean, and you're an introvert, and could you ignore a person?
Doxed, but
okay, but we've talked about it before, yes. I'm sure. But if someone was just standing on your doorstep and knocking, and how long would it take you to at least talk to them through the door?
If I don't have police to call,
yeah, if you have no one to call,
yeah, I'm still not doing it. There's no way.
Would you be comfortable going to sleep knowing he's standing right there?
No, I guess not. Okay, fair enough.
Yeah, see, you're gonna get tired at some point.
There is a point.
Yeah. Especially if you don't know what he wants. You've never seen this guy before in your life. And he's not brandishing a weapon. He doesn't appear to be holding a weapon. He just, you know, knock, knock, knock. And then finally...
This is reason for me to invest in a megaphone so I could talk to him through the door.
What do you want?
Go away.
but Steve, even you telling him to go away, you've gone from just not engaging him to now you've started
a conversation. Yeah.
And that's always a better option than that's it. Get the guns.
Right. Know? Walk out there with the gun pointed at him. Get out of here. Yeah.
Right. And, you know, and not only that, but this kind of society encourages people to not be aggressive. Also by the fact that anyone seeing you brandishing a weapon, they're going to be put on edge real quick. they might feel that their life is in danger, and now you're the one who might be pushing aggression on other people. Maybe not to the point where they should, you know, return it, but, you know, I'm watching you now. Like, if you do anything that's even a little bit more threatening, I might perceive that as a threat. So people would have to be kind of a head on a swivel, not, you know, the social tendency would be, I don't want to cause a big splash. I'm not wanting to threaten anybody. And pushing people into conversations is a good aspect. Not to mention that I think one of the things we see as an issue today is people are too willing to just pick up the phone and call the police on just...
That's true.
Just for any reason, you know? And I think that's a bad thing for, quote, society. Especially for you as a person. If you're the kind of person that if you see someone that makes you uncomfortable... if you see someone selling lemonade on the street and you don't like it, or your neighbors are having a barbecue and it's too loud, yeah, I'm pulling some specific instances that you know about, or someone's fishing behind your property on a lake.
Ooh.
Ooh. Yeah. People just pick the phone up. They just call the police. Or they'll have the conversation. And I know I'm being super anecdotal at this point, but I'm going to cite literally, go to YouTube and type in, I would say star this, but... type in, and then they called the police on me. Just type that in, and you'll find a ton of instances, recordings of people who are just minding their own business, and someone comes up. Go ahead. I thought you were going to say something.
Well, yeah, this is just the classic, like, people, yeah, someone doesn't like what this person is up to, so they call the cops to go harass that person in hopes that they'll stop.
Right.
Even if they're not breaking any laws.
They just don't like it. Or... if they won't just call the cops, they'll approach them with this hostile attitude of, I can call somebody that with a gun who will come give you a problem. And because so many people just want to avoid the police, it's a viable tactic, which it makes me sick, which is also consequentially why I like to watch YouTube videos of people saying, fine, go call the police, because that makes me happy, because that would be me. Go ahead. I don't answer questions, but anyway, but yeah, like, and I know this is really loose here, but, and I'm trying to tie it to the topic, but it's also something I've been thinking about is, but if you know you don't have the police to call, and that's just not an option for you.
Do you really want to go start a fight with that person? Because that's what you're going
to
do.
Right. Do you want to be the person that walks out there with a gun and harasses them? Most people I don't think are that much of a-holes. You know,
no.
Even if you're a nuisance, you're not an a-hole. And not only that, but you might be putting your life at risk.
Well, exactly. Because you don't know how they're going to react to it either.
Yeah. And don't get me wrong. I think it's sick that you can just pick up a phone and have some goons with guns come rough somebody up for you. Like, I think that's messed up. Mm-hmm. If you are so convinced that
for
that's
free.
Well,
okay.
For
free
taxes.
Free TM. Yes.
Free TM. But if you don't make enough money, it is free. So, yeah, but. If you have, and don't get me wrong, if you have that conviction, you think that's what should happen, then at least have the common decency to do it yourself. You go do it. If you think it's such a problem, stop putting it on other people, you know, and it's at this place that I'll even kind of stand up for the police, which I normally don't. It would suck to be that person to go, oh, I'm getting a phone call. I got to go talk to this person. And they're immediately going to be on edge because, spoiler alert, no one likes the police. Because who does like having someone who's wearing a freaking bulletproof vest and a gun and
all kinds of other things to hurt you with.
And not only that, but they also come with this badge, which offers them this legal protection from if they did shoot you. Well, it's not the same as if they were not on duty and shot you.
Right.
Don't get me started. That's next week's topic. That's next week's topic. But yeah, if you want to do that, go do it yourself. You know, and same thing. If you have a contract,
I do feel bad for cops in that position because yeah, I think a lot of the times the reason that cops would go harass somebody like that is because if they don't, then Karen is going to harass them on the phone to go harass that person.
Right. Or it might get violent, you know, and then people can be like, well, where were the police at to keep the peace and all that? Because now you're responsible because there's no peace. You know what I mean? It's not the person who broke the peace's fault. It's the police who didn't keep it.
Okay.
Fault. Yeah. Another thing about that. But yeah, if you have an issue with it, take care of it yourself. And not only that, but as a society that promotes people getting involved themselves, taking care of business themselves. I think that just feeds back into the same kind of society which would be required for us to transition to a free society in which people take care of themselves. Taking a part of taking care of yourself is dealing with things that go wrong. You didn't pay your lease.
Right.
I want to evict you. These are things that we have to work out with ourselves.
Yeah. How do we solve these problems without getting the guns out? Yeah.
Exactly. And if we can create a society, or we can group together and make a society where we encourage people to do that, and we encourage people to not want to instill, start violence because you might get shot because you don't know what he's packing, you know? I think going down that route kind of feeds itself. Like, that kind of culture grows that kind of culture. And also vice versa, I think the kind of culture that you outsource thuggery to government-backed police is only going to grow the kind of society that wants to throw more money behind government-backed police, you know? Because, you know, your neighbor calls the police on you to give you problems. Well, you know what? I have a problem with that. Watch for the next time they do something even slightly annoying, and then you call the police. My neighbor's
stereo is turned up too loud.
Yeah, and then you get this, you know, you get this instance where the police are just getting called out all the time to work out a disagreement between the both of you that you should work out between yourselves.
First of all, doesn't matter, probably, and then also is costing everyone else around you way too much money.
Exactly. But it feeds itself, you know? And all of a sudden, we need to pay the police more because they're getting called out here to deal with this BS all the time.
Right. We have this officer whose only job is to go out to this neighborhood and talk between these two neighbors. Yeah.
Yeah. Which is now incurring costs on everyone in society, not just those two people.
We got to pay that guy a salary just to do that. Mm-hmm. Come on.
Not only that, but things get perceived to be a little bit more tense. And now the police officer needs to protect himself. So now he needs a new gun. He needs body armor.
Yes, yeah, we have to buy equipment for this.
And maybe, I don't want to...
it's considerably cheaper than his salary, but...
it is, but not only that, but you know what would make him feel real safe? Making sure that neither of them had any guns. Maybe sure that if I do go in there, I'll at least be the only one with a gun. That make me feel real safe. You see where the road I'm going down?
Yes.
In a system in which no one takes responsibility, you're giving up authority. And giving up that responsibility means giving up more authority, and you're giving it to a central agency, which makes fewer people able to deal with things on their own without taking that same route. All I'm saying is if you go into a society where people, each person has to contribute and be responsible, they will also want to promote other people being responsible and taking care of themselves, because people who are responsible make good customers. They make good neighbors and all that kind of stuff. So I guess that's all I'm saying. In contracts, it all kind of fits into that, because contracts ultimately are just agreements between people at the end of the day. And contracts, you almost need some kind of agency when no one can trust each other, you know, but that societal erosion of having armed thugs to come answer all your problems, that erodes trust in society. Whereas what I'm promoting would promote tyrant unity, I would hope, and trust. And don't get me wrong, I know there's still going to be issues, but if we can make solving those issues ones that are very violence averse by making sure that everyone involved is going to have to be responsible for any kind of violence that gets dished out, and you don't need the police to do that. You don't need to put, in my opinion, you don't need to put the threat of the law behind somebody who might need to go use violence. A great example is look at anybody who's ever deployed their firearm in a self-defense situation. Very few of those people are ever happy about it. It's not something you want to happen.
No.
It's not the worst day of your life because, well, you're going to be stuck in legal hell for a while. No, you killed a person. And it sucks.
Yeah.
Most people don't want to do that. And not only that, you had to do it. Like, and you live with that for the rest of your life. And no one wants to do that. Or most people, at least.
Yeah. Yes, there are some exceptions that I can think of who are frightening people. But
sure. But
most people, yeah, most people do not want to do that.
Anyway. But yeah, that's all I really had. I know we kind of walked a little bit away from contracts, but I think contracts are just one of many things that kind of build off of that same kind of social fabric of trust, I guess. But I think it's a really good example because it has to do with making agreements, and making agreements has to do with trust from one person to another person, and the environment that creates by people being able to trust each other on a one-on-one basis. So That's all I have. I know we're running on time, so.
I think I'm good with that.
All right, cool.
This was a good topic.
I agree. I'm really happy with this, so. Philosophers.
Philosophers. If you like the music in this episode, please check out Jippy on Bandcamp at jippy.bandcamp.com.
Philosophers is supported by viewers like you.
If there's a topic you'd like us to discuss,
or a topic you'd like to see revisited in the future,
please let us know by contacting us using the methods in the description,
or in the comments below. Thank you for listening.